You're listening to Talking Baseball with Ed Randall, presented by MLB.com. He's Ed Randall. He's talking baseball. What more do you need?
Hi, everybody. I'm Ed Randall, Big Ed and Nora's baby boy. And welcome back to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. Our guest was one of baseball's first player agents and went on to become one of its most successful. And boy, does he have stories. We welcome to the show Tom Rich. How did you get into the baseball agentry business?
Well, I was a fan since I was my brother and I started going to baseball at 7 years old. Saw Jackie Robinson play in Pittsburgh. Couldn't believe what I was watching, how amazing he was. But I, the players had no rights then.
We're talking what year?
Well, this, for me, in terms of starting to be involved, you know, in terms of qualified to be involved, was 19. I met Doc Ellis in 1971.
He was your first guy.
Yeah.
He would be your first guy.
He was, right. and this. I was always aware, and prior to that, for the kinds of problems that the players of color had, and Doc was the kind of guy. I was a young lawyer then. And a big fan. And Doc was the kind of guy that was extremely intelligent. And he also sees stuff. I mean, he was very perceptive. And he asked me if I'd represent him. And this was at a time where you were not allowed to have counsel. And long story short, I said, yeah, I'll do it. I said, let's go. And
what were those first? What were those first early days like?
Well, I've had to force my way into the meeting. I had a meeting with Joe L. Brown, one of the Hall of Famer, and deservedly so. And I actually.
But you were not a welcome presence.
Well, no. Well, he agreed to meet with me, and I went in, you know, in a three-piece suit, and. My face, which was another story. I had a lot of head of hair back then. But he comes out, and he's a very stately guy. Everybody knows that. And a very top shelf guy, Hall of Famer, you know, cutting edge. He comes out and he said, no, I changed my mind. I don't want to meet. I said, oh, really? So I took off my jacket and sat down. I said, I'm not leaving. And I was serious. And so, long story short, we started to talk just generally. And we talked for about 30 or 40 minutes and made another meeting and went on over a couple of months and worked it out because the way it was then, it was take it or leave it. You have nothing to say. Didn't have anything to do with anything. And so then a lot of other players, Doc was a very influential
He became
guy.
Your ambassador, too,
well,
for representation.
He was a guy that, for the guys that were angry about the system, they had every reason to be angry.
They had no rights.
You know, and so we became very close. And Doc was an unusual guy. The documentary that came later with some guys that I was involved with, and they did a great job and a serious job. And it was no punches pulled in any direction. That was who Doc was, and so I started to represent a lot of players.
On the Pirates?
Initially on the Pirates, but then it spread to guys like Joe Morgan because they understood what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, you know, I was a young lawyer. I had a practice.
But now you're dealing with a baseball establishment.
Yes.
That can't even imagine the idea of agents. You've got a union head in Marvin Miller, who comes in 1966 and told me he walked into a room with a filing cabinet and a phone.
Yes.
And that was it for the Players Association.
In Pittsburgh. And with Dick. you know, soon
Dick
after.
Morse.
And these, for Marvin, you know, not to get off subject, because it should never be off subject. Marvin Miller not to be in the HOF
is outrageous.
Is
I have said.
I know you have.
You've heard me say this. If you're going to have a list of three, ever, in no particular order, it's Babe Ruth, it is the Quinella of Branch Rickey and Jackie Robinson, and it's Marvin Miller. You tell me who else could have been more influential than those guys.
Let me put it to you like this. Cases could be made for a few others, but I, for one, would not quarrel with that at all. Not only that, I'd scream for it.
But back to the atmosphere that you experienced in the early days.
It was
completely adversarial.
It was more than adversarial, because it was non-existent in terms of it being substantive. It was a one-way Corrigan. You know, you couldn't go in reverse, and you couldn't go forward. But
there were stories that Mickey Mantle won the Triple Crown in 1956. In 57, he doesn't win the Triple Crown, and the first contract he receives home in Dallas, Texas, was a cut of $10,000. That's what it was like.
I have a Ralph Kiner story. I got to know Ralph Kiner in later years a couple times, drinking some port with him when I was at the Hall of Fame a few times with players, people and friends, etc. And with Joe Morgan, who was very active. He told me this story both times we had port a few years apart on the porch of Branch Rickey and the Pirates, and he led the league in home runs, you know, for seven consecutive years. He goes in, Rickey said to him this famous speech: "We came in last with you, and we come in last without you, no raise."
And traded him to the Chicago Cubs.
Well, that was later.
Right.
That was later, because he started having back problems when he was traded. He had led the league. My brother and I, we were little, we would go. He didn't leave the ballpark at Forbes Field until he had his last at bat, even if it was 13-2. Right. And that was the way it was then.
Tom Rich is with us, one of the first player agents, one of the most successful player agents. It was an atmosphere constantly adversarial. There was constant fighting between those that were representing the players with the backing of the union, first with Marvin Miller and then with Don Fehr and Gene Orza, against management. And it was a terrible year in and year out. And you were in the trenches.
There were years of 20 years or so of extreme battle. And these years now are much better, because there's a lot more understanding of the damage that gets done to the sport. And the other thing is, you have to give a lot of credit to the people that are involved in the sport of getting things. Even back in those days, I had a number of friends in management that I used to have cocktails with or meals with, because I always wanted to try anything to avoid the wars. But once the wars started, and some of them, especially the collusion, were outrageous. That was blanket. That was one of the biggest fixes in industry.
Tim Raines, Jack Morris, Kirk Gibson, go right down the line.
Couldn't get
work.
Well, Jack Clark, yes, and Tim, and no, I made some offers to people that were, you couldn't, you know, believe it. This was a no raise type stuff, mm-hmm. You know, because I knew what was going on, and when they turned stuff down like that, I said, okay, we're gonna play war games. And the union, and so everybody did their best. They won all three cases. And there was a lot of effort involved. I think everybody learned a lot. The older guys learned a lot from that kind of stuff. I mean, baseball's bigger than all of us. You know, I was an addict by the time I was 8 years old, starting at six. You know, my brother used to take me by the hand. We would play spinner all-star baseball of the veterans of the modern, keep records, batting averages.
Everybody had board games.
I've been hooked. Yeah. I have been hooked on baseball ever since. Still am. Have four sets down in Florida. They're all on. A lot of times you're watching multiple sports because the seasons cross over now. And, you know, now it's hockey, basketball, football, baseball.
And to your point, they've come so far, and now peace has broken out yet again with the recent labor
agreement. And I love it.
And you love it because it's becoming an $11 billion industry.
Without a doubt.
And everybody has put away the guns.
Well, they have. Not put away the guns, but they didn't draw them. They wore them, but they didn't draw them. Mm-hmm. And that always has to be the way because there are certain forces that want certain things. They'd love to have a cap on one side. They'd like to have complete freedom on the other side. Well, it can't go like that. There have to be compromises. Manfred as commissioner, he was Randy Levine's right hand during the difficult times.
Mm-hmm.
And there were many difficult times.
Right, but especially in 1994 when the World Series got canceled.
Yeah, Manfred has been around as outside counsel, inside counsel, commissioner. He's an intelligent, reasonable man. Very well educated, very experienced, and the union having to come, you know, the loss of Michael Weiner was devastating. From a personal, he reminded me more of anybody more in my life, of my brother, in terms of the way he carried himself. Mm. But the way he carried himself in the face of what he was going through, he was working.
Unbelievable.
You were having conversations with him, you know, and he was in a bad treatment state.
Right.
He was focused. He was still brilliant. And he was inspiring. And boy, oh boy, do we all miss just his presence. Yeah. But the guys fought through it and they came to a peace, and that's good. There's a lot of pieces that are being worked over. People are trying to see where the leverage is. And, you have full firms involved. You have like 6 and 8, 10 man teams involved in negotiations, in trades. You have young people coming into the game. You have all these metrics and all this business. And I understand a lot about mathematics. But the point is, these decisions that are made strictly on metrics or alone, I love what Madden said about Fowler, because it looks like Fowler's going to move on. He said, I don't care what anybody said. I congratulated him for his, like, stop by. I barely know him. You know, I know him over the years. Handshake here or there. Congratulate him. I said, I just wanted to say the things you said about Fowler, what he brings, you know, his persona,
his presence.
He said, it doesn't seem to matter to, it matters a lot to me. Mm-hmm. And he was very forceful about it, because I call it the Willie Stargell syndrome. You can do Kirby Puckett, Joe Moore. You can talk about some of the greatest guys, the difference that they had on a team. A guy like Dave Parker, he lifted the team 2 feet off the ground.
Speaking of which, we're with Tom Rich for just another moment on Ed Randall's Talking Baseball. I will never forget, covering the winter meetings, when you brought Parker in, all dressed up, looked gorgeous, because he was going to the Cincinnati.
He looks like a movie star.
But you were the guy who rehabilitated his career when it looked like He was on the express train to the Hall of Fame as a lifelong Pittsburgh Pirate. It didn't work out, and you brought him to the baseball winter meetings where they had a press conference.
Well, he was definitely being shut out, and you know, I thought Cincinnati was a good idea because they're a straight-up group, Bob House and this. I said, okay, we got to present you in a way that you could present yourself in an outstanding fashion, just as you do as a ball player on the field. He did it to the max. He was pro, got a contract, and then the next year he was second in the league in MVP to Willie McGee, who I had also represented, but Parker had lifted this team to second place when they were undermanned at that time. He is one of the best guys on the field I've ever seen. And his influence, he made everybody feel 6 inches taller. And he was that good. And he was also bright. He did make a terrific comeback, went on to play for a long time
after that. How many winter meetings, how many years you been coming to the winter meetings?
Almost forever. I've been doing this for 45 years, and I think I might have missed one for some reason or another. It might have been a woman.
Do you remember the first winter meetings that you went to?
I'm not sure.
But certainly the character of the winter meetings has changed dramatically.
When the wars were going on, then, you know, way back, I would go have meetings with people one-on-one a lot. This has now become a whole convention for years now, and there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of very capable people all over the place. The broadcast industry has grown in quality and quantity. The representation, the people that run teams and the minor league programs, a lot of those people don't get the credit they deserve. The agent business has gotten way more flooded because there was no money back in the day, and I mean no money back in the day. But now there's a ton of money. People are, and there's a lot of doing anything it takes to get a client, bar almost nothing. And that is a big problem. That is a problem that has yet to shake out. But it will, because that's something that has to happen.
But you could never have imagined that at the time in which Bud Selig took over as the commissioner in 1992, before he became officially commissioner, where the gross revenues for baseball were $1.3 billion. Tom, we're looking at $11 billion in 2017. We're looking at the Chicago Cubs starting their own television network, the Philadelphia Phillies.
Many.
We can't even imagine the money that lay ahead.
Well, there's no question about that. And, of course, the Major League Baseball's entrepreneurial things involving the programming and the statistics and that entity, which is now a standalone entity owned by the teams, is just going to grow like crazy. That is a public offering that is yet to occur, and it will. And these teams, their equity value has been pumped by that and other things. There are these franchises have gone up incredibly. You know, complaining about salaries, look, the money is basically split between active players and teams. The difference is that people forget in sports, because they just read about player salaries, is this. When a player's done, just like a movie star is done, they get very, very well paid, and then they're done forever with that. The teams have franchise value. They get their money every year, and they get franchises that have gone up multiple times in multiple. And so which side of that business deal would you rather be on? I mean, I had my Wall Street license, you know, when I was a young man in law school. and I was a stockbroker and went to night school. A stockbroker, I would write reports on golf oil. That was real. That took a genius. Not hardly. But what I'm saying is the entrepreneurial value of the franchise has gone through the roof. Now there's a few that are troubled, but they still own their franchises, and they'll either get a stadium like in Oakland or Tampa or move. So which side would you rather be on? Old friend, would you rather own the TV station or do your own program?
But from where it came from, it is unbelievable. Tom, thanks so much for being with me.
It's always fun to be with you no matter what, even if we were standing in a telephone booth.
That'll do it for Tom Rich and myself on MLB.com. If you're on the move, thanks so much for the ride. And thanks for listening to Ed Randall's Talking Baseball.